Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Plus $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're here to talk about the defense after that very disappointing loss to the Steelers. Tough loss, obviously. One where I think there are actually some nice silver linings in it, but it's going to take a while for us to recognize this. But imagine this. We could be talking about the offense. That'd be a lot worse. Joining me here for this show is Sam Njoku of Ravens Talk Podcast. Sam, how you doing?
Feeling pretty good, all things considered. Great to be on the show. First time on it, but I'm a long-time listener, so very excited to talk football.
I appreciate it, Sam. I've been on your show a couple times now, I think, and always really enjoyed talking football with you. So this is great to have you on the show here. A lot of self-inflicted wounds in this game for the Ravens. A couple missed field goals, drive stalled by penalties. Some of the things that are said at the podium, like Lamar being asked about the penalties, and he said, well, it seems like there was penalties every drive. Well, there were two drives stalled by penalties, but it certainly wasn't the reason why every drive was stalled. But there were some unfortunate penalties, and then three turnovers in the game. Very tough to win a game like that.
Yeah, it's almost impossible, especially in a game where it's always tight like this. Three turnovers as opposed to very few on the other end, it's going to be a disaster. Very tough to climb out of that hole. The Ravens almost did it, but if you're having three turnovers and all of those penalties and of course, the missed field goals you spoke of, that's a recipe for a loss, especially in a Ravens-Steelers game that always comes down to the wire.
Yeah, disappointing in a lot of ways. The offense was a lot of what was not functioning along with the special teams. Obviously, the penalties were offensive line penalties largely that stalled drives. The missed field goals were special teams. And then the turnovers, of course, on the offense and largely preventable turnovers. I guess there's some real ball security issues in all three cases, which led to, I think it probably should have been three fumbles. I wouldn't be surprised if the Ravens appeal to the NFL about the Hill play and try and get it reversed to be a fumble, because it looked like a completed pass to me.
Yes, and I was echoing that on my show earlier today. That probably is going to turn out to be a fumble. That's not an interception. If it is going to be an interception, then that's a different conversation to be had about whether it indeed was a turnover. But if you go by their thought process, I think that's for sure going to be a third fumble, and the Ravens should win that appeal for sure.
Okay. Well, they have a certain time. I think it might be Wednesday or something. They turn in their plays to the league and say, hey, yes, we think so-and-so should have had a quarterback hit, or so-and-so should have been credited with a sack instead of so-and-so. So they'll have a chance to do that. Look at the defense.
I think you're right about that for sure.
Yeah. The defense as a whole played, I think, their second best game of the year. If I look at the games, even though they only allowed 10 points to Denver, that was a lot of self-inflicted Denver overthrows that would have, I think, certainly been a better offensive performance for that had Bo Nix not been, you know, missing some open receivers. But I thought the only other game is Buffalo, really, that compares to this one. And I would put the Buffalo game ahead of this one, even though the Steelers only got field goals or were kept out of the end zone.
Yeah, this was definitely a great game. I think for sure if the Ravens were going to look at a game that they need to build off of, this would be the one of the things that I saw in this game that I hadn't seen all season. And that's probably because Zachary Rohr went to work after that Thursday night football game. And you could tell certain things that were there this week that wasn't there in previous weeks. And I'm sure we'll get into it, especially with the secondary personnel. So I think to your point, the Bills game was kind of a, you know, just starting off fast and not looking back. The Broncos game, I think there's a rookie QB that probably, you know, got a taste of what it's like to play NFL defense with a lot of looks. And I think this is the game where you start to see maybe the personnel's coming together And better late than never, as the Ravens only have about 6 games left in the regular season.
Yeah, it's honestly, it's not too late. They did take a big hit in this game in terms of their postseason chances. They're probably going to be playing on the road. If you're a season ticket holder, that's very, very disappointing. I can't even begin to explain that to people. But, we'll be traveling for games and instead of watching them at home and driving, 12 miles or whatever to the game, we'll be flying somewhere to go to it. It's not nearly as good to have road games, and they had a chance to play 2 consecutive home games and get the number 2 seed. Buffalo, by beating the Chiefs, may have reduced that chance, but I think it was still open to them in terms of getting the number 2 seed, because I don't think Buffalo is by any stretch invincible.
No, and that's the thing that I think Ravens fans need to understand. Of course, you want the Chiefs to lose because, you're the Chiefs and they beat you in the AFC Championship game. But as far as seeding is concerned, Bills winning that game definitely hampers the chances of getting a home playoff game, especially if you're looking for those top-tier seeds. But as you mentioned, losing to the Steelers even more so decreases that possibility because the chances of you winning the AFC North is diminished considerably given that 3-game lead. And it's going to take a lot from other sources to get you back into the hunt. So you're right. That loss that the Chiefs suffered doesn't do the Ravens any favors. But again, it's a long season, and there are a few games to go that may give Ravens some benefit. But again, the Ravens have a long road ahead of them with a couple of marquee matchups of their own. So it's not totally set in stone where this season goes. But to your point, it's looking like the Ravens are going to have to travel on the road. And maybe that's a good thing considering their past and what the Ravens have had to go through when they had that top 2 seeding in previous years.
They've been a very successful road playoff team in general. Certainly in the early Harbaugh years, that was the hallmark of the Joe Flacco and the Lewis and Reed defenses of that era. They were all very, very successful on the road. Even if you go back to 2000, they only played one home playoff game. Then they played road neutral for the last 3. So they're successful playing on the road. I think they can do it again. At one point, they had the best ever road record in NFL history in terms of the playoffs. I don't know if they still have that, but they're close because nobody really wins on the road. Even this, like San Francisco 49ers, think about all the success they've had in the playoffs over the history of that team. And they've got just a terrible road record. The Oakland Raiders, same thing, just a terrible road record in the playoffs, even though they've had a lot of success. So, it's not someplace where people typically play well. And it's not still impossible that the Ravens could win the division. They have to get a lot of help, though. They'll have to win the last game with Pittsburgh and then have Pittsburgh lose at least 2 of their 4 divisional matchups against Cincinnati and Cleveland for it to happen. And that does seem like kind of a long shot at this point.
Yeah, especially with the Raiders Steelers looked on Sunday, I'd say it's pretty difficult. I guess that Bengals matchup, 2 matchups with that offense, maybe they have a chance to do it, but you're asking a lot from the Cincinnati Bengals. You're asking a lot from yourself to continue to win those games and find a way to beat a Steelers team that looked pretty good matchup-wise against you on Sunday. So definitely a tall task ahead, but as you mentioned, they're not out the woods yet. That's one of the good things about being a good football team is that you can be down and still climb your way out of it based on what I've seen the previous 10 games. But again, they're behind the 8-ball here. They need to get things going and get some much needed help from outside sources.
You know, one thing we should take solace in, though, is the fact that the Ravens are almost certainly in the playoffs. And I take a big risk in saying that on air, but the chance of them actually missing the playoffs at this point is still very, very, very slim. The AFC has separated itself, and the teams that have to catch the Ravens, like Denver, who are only a game behind, are really a game and a half because of the head-to-head. So it's very unlikely that they'll get caught from behind by one of the other teams. Sure, they could end up with the 7 seed and have to go to Buffalo or even Kansas City for the first game. That wouldn't be ideal, but they almost certainly are in the playoffs.
Yeah, and that's really all it's about. Get to the dance, I know, and to your point, you mentioned how difficult it is to win on the road. You want to get that 1 seed. You want to get that 2 seed. You want to play at home, but get to the dance. Get to the dance, and you got the team that has shown they can beat these teams. They beat Buffalo. They were a toe away from beating the Chiefs. So just get there, and things can happen. But I think the Ravens do get there. As you mentioned, they've pretty much separated themselves. The good teams from the bad. It's just about, fixing the little, deficiencies in your team and being at the best possible position to make a run come January.
Now, there's a number of psychos that we've heard from out on Twitter who basically are saying that we didn't even want the 1 seed last year. It's the worst thing. Oh, we don't want a week off. first of all, a pile of crap. And, you know, getting an extra week off in the NFL is absolutely enormous. And yeah, the Ravens haven't converted it in their, well, they won their first game. I don't know if that's converting it or not. You know, basically they essentially got to the AFC Championship at home. You can't ask for a lot more than that in a season. There are people who do. Nothing less than a Super Bowl will do. But, you know, I can't imagine anyone not wanting the one seed if it's the alternative of the one or say the three or the four seed.
You're fooling yourself. You're fooling yourself to think that you don't want to get that one seed. That gives you a wild card victory just automatically. And if you get a victory, as the Ravens did last year, you're guaranteed a home playoff game in the AFC Championship game. That is too good to pass up. You've seen teams like the Patriots, the Chiefs recently being able to capitalize on that. The one seed is invaluable, and the Ravens will be behind the eight ball in the playoff picture if they do, in fact, fail to reach the one seed, which, of course, they likely will not be able to do. So, yeah, if I'm a fan, I'm wanting the one seed every year. Please give it to me, because your chances for winning the Super Bowl increases dramatically if you're able to get it.
Yep. The one seed, and I have to mention the importance of the two seed, because if the one seed is worth 10 on your scale, on your 1 to 10 scale, the two seed is worth 7 or 8, because you're guaranteed two home playoff games in a row as long as you keep winning. You got to hold up your end of the bargain in that. And you're guaranteed to play the lowest seed in the first round, which is a real big advantage, because there's usually a pretender in the playoffs, and they're usually the 7 seed. They're not usually somewhere else. So you get to play them first. It's a much better situation, but that now the 2 seed, which was kind of the golden hope that remained for this Ravens team with the Chiefs so far ahead of them, now appears to be a very distant hope at this time.
Yeah, and it's very unfortunate, because as you mentioned, if you don't want to be the 1 seed, I mean, if you don't get the 1 seed, you definitely want to be the 2 seed, because not only are you guaranteed 2 home playoff games, but you could possibly host the AFC Championship game at home as well, depending on what happens with the 1 seed. So definitely wanting to get the 2 seed. After that, it gets very difficult. You definitely want to win your division to get that home playoff game. But if you get in a wild card spot, you are fighting from behind. You're definitely at a disadvantage. Crazier things have happened. The Ravens have won the championship being that wild card spot, but it's much more difficult, as we've seen in the past few years.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, now let's turn our attention to the defense in this game and what happened. I think there are circumstances where I can look at this game and say this is a turning point for the team in the season. I think the first topic on the agenda here is one where I think we're going to dive right into this. Now, it's hard to do this, because anybody who looks at this as a turning point right now is going to say, oh, yeah, of course, turning point south. This is where this Ravens season got destroyed, and they're falling off a cliff. But the truth of the matter is, the Ravens made significant changes in the secondary in this game. And I think some of them played out in a way that really lend hope for the rest of the season for the Ravens.
Ken, I'm so glad you said that, because that was my mindset. Not only after watching the game, but during the game, I said, this is going to be the turning point for the season. Wins and losses come and go. You definitely want to be that team that comes out with the victory, especially in these rivalry games. But what I'm seeing on the field is a team that is definitely made some choices, you know, took some steps in the right direction. They've definitely, there's going to be some philosophy changes now with this decision that they've made. And I know we're going to talk about that concerning the secondary, including the safeties. But this change is showing us that, one, they're in a drawing board. They're very serious when they say, we're going to work on making changes. And two, if this change is coupled with what we know the offense can be, it's going to be an entirely different team that we're looking at down the stretch as the postseason approaches.
Yeah, it should be in terms of what they're doing. But let's set up and give the background a little bit, because how the Ravens got here is kind of important to understand this. Now, Eddie Jackson, of course, was one of the big stories this last week, because he didn't travel with the team. Cryptic messaging. And so if you want to decode some things that come from the Baltimore Ravens, particularly from their Twitter account, when they say something is not injury related, that usually means it's a performance, work ethic, coach's decision, reason for this thing, as opposed to a personal issue, which is the other thing you sometimes see said. And so that's why I hop on something like the Eddie Jackson thing. And I'm saying, okay, that's not somebody in his family died, which would be, you know, horrible and tragic. And we don't even want to consider it as a possibility. But all of the messaging before and after is an indication there's some blow up between Eddie Jackson and either Harbaugh or others in terms of his playing time being there and whatnot. And they just decided it'd be better to not have him on the road trip. That's a pretty deep step to take. Now, Jackson is a veteran player, so if they wanted him back, I guess they could. But generally, the young player in particular, you'd want that player around learning in the special teams meetings. Or sorry, not a special teams meeting, in the meetings where they're discussing assignments or looking over film and whatnot. And we've heard from players who say they don't want to talk in such meetings. They don't want to raise their hand because they know they're not playing. But on the other hand, it still is a learning opportunity.
Yeah, and the Ravens do not disclose information like that lightly. I want to make sure people understand when the Ravens posted that message on social media that Eddie Jackson wouldn't be traveling with the team due to non-injury, that is a message being sent regarding Eddie Jackson. So that definitely raised some red flags for me. To your point, that is absolutely correct. The Ravens only do that when it is a performance issue, coaching issue, disciplinary action issue. And John Harbaugh mentioned that this is an in-house thing. So that all lends credence to the fact that this is likely something that is going to cause Eddie Jackson to not be on the field for the foreseeable future, at least maybe a game or so. We saw something similar with Marcus Williams. Yep. And that maybe changed a bit when he came out the game after, but you know, he didn't play much in this upcoming game. We'll talk about that. But I think the point is the Ravens had to do what they had to do. And it's very interesting the way they went about showing it to the public.
Yeah, now the Marcus Williams thing actually a little different because he was active on game day the week they sat him intentionally. So they knew it was happening, and Jackson was the free safety and disastrous game at Cleveland. You know, in some ways probably cost them the ball game with two touchdowns allowed, a missed tackle on the third touchdown. It wasn't his receiving responsibility, but he missed a tackle at the 4 or 5 yard line. He played as bad as you can play pretty much at that position in that game. And then they, to go through this rotation of having one free safety that sits out 1 week and another back end safety that sits out the next, it's not a healthy position for your team to be in. But we've now seen, I think this is the third consecutive week that Ardarius Washington has effectively been a full-time back end player as opposed to being a slot corner. Don't know if that's even the best position for him, but Ardarius Washington certainly had a good game in this one on the back end, which I thought was extremely encouraging.
Yeah, I definitely like what I saw from Ardarius Washington. There are reasons why you prefer to have him at slot corner as opposed to safety. But as you mentioned, he had a great game in this one. His skill set or his acumen for getting to the football is something that I appreciated when the Ravens brought him in years back. But now that he's pretty much being forced into this situation due to the level of play for Marcus Williams and Eddie Jackson, you kind of like the fact that he had that opportunity early on in the season. So now he's getting more comfortable in a situation where he's just in there, trying to make something happen, learn on the fly. It's something where I'm sure the Ravens have got him acclimated to the situation. He looked really good against the Steelers opposite Kyle Hamilton. So it's very interesting how the Ravens do moving forward. But to your point, this is not a healthy position to be in, moving safeties in and out, Marcus Williams and Eddie Jackson, two guys who we thought coming into the season would be huge parts of this defense. It hasn't been that case, but they have depth at safety, and it's showing in this one.
Yeah, they're certainly paying Marcus Williams a lot of money, but I would think I would bet a lot of money right now that neither Marcus nor Eddie Jackson will be back in 2025, just to put it that way. There's a big savings on Marcus Williams' contract. When I say big, it's about $6 million of cap savings from cutting him. That they will certainly do. And I think safety probably rises in terms of the draft board. And the big other change, of course, in this game was Kyle Hamilton moving to free safety from his traditional role, which is a mix of a little bit of strong safety where he is playing on the back end, usually in only the base coverage or the base personnel. He plays big nickel and he plays dime. And those two roles where his status as the league's best horizontal defender really is maximized. It's a shame to lose that, but it's just what I liken it to is this, Sam. You have the ace of spades, the ace of trumps, whatever game you like to play in cards and trick taking. You have the ace of trumps sitting there as a dime slash big nickel. He's the guy who gives you the most horizontal defense of any player in the entire National Football League. And I'll literally take him over anyone else.
Yes.
If you move him back to free safety, I still think he has decent instincts, and he's shown an ability, I thought, in this game to make plays coming forward on the ball, even when he's playing on the back end. But it reduces him to the queen of diamonds or something. He's an off he's not the Trump, he's not a Trump suit card anymore. He's just he's a very good player, but he's definitely not at the absolute top. But it's not just about the player you moved. It's about the player you replaced.
Yeah, and it's really, I talked to fans about it after the game. The closer you are to the line of scrimmage, the closer you are to the ball, and you don't want anyone closer to the ball than Kyle Hamilton, who just has, you know, the range, the length to be a problem come snap time. So definitely tough to have him move over there. You definitely lose a bit of that, keeping him away from the field. And as you mentioned, he does have that ability to get to the ball, something that, you know, a lot of safeties don't possess. And he has that speed and range to get to the ball carrier, even if he is out in open space like that, far away from the line of scrimmage. But yeah, if you're a Ravens team member or coach, you definitely wish it didn't make the switch that hadn't made, because Big Nickel's huge for Kyle Hamilton. I think he's made a living the last couple of seasons in that role. So, but the Ravens had to do what they had to do. They didn't have much of a choice. They were losing too many yards to these open field catches because of lack of play from their safeties. And that definitely shores up that situation. What that means for the middle of that defense remains to be seen against these other teams that have an acumen for targeting that area. We talked about it last week. The Steelers don't really target the middle of the field. We didn't see much of that in this game either, but I think moving forward, it'll be interesting to see how this defense performs in that regard.
Yeah. It's, you know, one thing that they really missed Hamilton for close to the line of scrimmage was the Steelers run a lot of 12 personnel, a lot, two tight ends on the field, an awful lot. Sometimes they have three, but two tight ends a lot. And that's a big coverage responsibility for Hamilton that is passed off to someone else. Now, in this game, we'll talk about this a little bit later, but it's mostly Marlon Humphrey. So you're getting a really good coverage asset on the field on that player. So you maybe don't notice it quite as much. Where I think the Ravens did notice it was on some of the outside runs, and this included both of the Fields runs and some of the other outside runs by Harris and whatnot. They really would have liked to have Hamilton monitoring that line of scrimmage to either side. If the strong side runs, he would have been in a perfect position to play it. But even on the Fields runs, I think there would have been situations where the Ravens might have been a dime. And if that were the case, then he would have been in a good position to make a play there. It's just unfortunate because the Ravens obviously not only lost the tackling ability of Hamilton there, but they also later in the game lost the tackling ability of Roquan.
Yeah, and that injury does suck for the Ravens, but you are spot on with that Justin Fields analysis. Kyle Hamilton not being in the middle, not being at the line of scrimmage, definitely played a huge part in the Steelers' success in those outside runs with Justin Fields. And that's, you know, you're not going to get that every game. So I try and look at it from a 17-game perspective, even going to the postseason. Long story, long term, the Ravens are likely going to be in a situation where they don't really have to worry about opposing teams running the football effectively on a regular basis. At least you'd hope so, given the way the offense has played throughout the season. And you're much more concerned with the pass defense, especially given how they performed through the first 11 games of the season. But to your point, Kyle Hamilton has to be back there. I think that's the huge upgrade. Zachary Orr did a great job with that. And the fact that he's not at the line of scrimmage, I saw a little bit of that. I don't know if you remember the week one of the Kansas City Chiefs game. I think they played a little more Kyle Hamilton in the back. I'm not sure if I'm mistaken, but I remember having that concern with the way the Ravens played him. They went back to that in this week. And I think the Ravens are going to, I think John Harbaugh actually spoke to that moving forward. That two safety lineup was here to stay. And I think that's probably for the best.
Yeah, they play him on the back end in two different packages. In the base package, they play in the back. You got four defensive backs. You don't always show too high in that situation. Yeah. Oftentimes, he's up close to the line of scrimmage. But the more obvious place where they play him on the back end is in their standard nickel. And they still play a fair amount of standard nickel relative to the big nickel. Big nickel you play when you've got a big slot receiver or a tight end that's flexed wide. So he's ideal for that kind of thing. He's not necessarily ideal if your slot receiver is, you know, 5'9 and looks like Zay Flowers, yeah. Moves like Zay Flowers, worse. And so he brings a lot of things to the line of scrimmage, and it's unfortunate. But I want to get back to my cards analogy real quickly. Even sure. If he's the queen of diamonds on the back ends, you're replacing, you know, the three of clubs in Marcus Williams right now. And Marcus Williams used to be a hell of a player back there. He used to be a king of spades on the back end and being one of the best safeties in this league. But that's just not the case anymore. And yet, for whatever reason, I've never seen a player fall so far so fast. Even last year when he was hurt the whole year, I mean, he could still cover. He could still get to the spot as needed. In his first year with the Ravens, he's an unbelievable ball hawk in terms of his per snap productivity. It's sad as hell. And I'm going to be even more frustrated, I think, if Kyle Hamilton goes somewhere else and has success. But I think the well may have been poisoned for him in terms of the likelihood that he'll get signed to a spot where he'll get a lot of playing time. I think he'll be on a one-year prove-it deal, and he may still not be a starter there.
I mean, I've been watching film all season long. I cannot even put my finger on the reason for his decline. I mean, sometimes he looks like the old guy, his old self that he was back in New Orleans and even his first year here with the Ravens. But sometimes his decision-making is lackluster, and he's just not getting to the ball fast enough. I'm very perplexed if it's an injury concern or if he's just, you know, father time catching up to him. He's still a young guy, all things considered. So very interesting how his decline happened. And as you mentioned, I will be furious if he goes to another team, maybe even Pittsburgh of all places, and performs well and comes back to that old self. But the Ravens had no choice. I gave him opportunity after opportunity after opportunity for him to show himself. And even with Kyle Hamilton, maybe something happens, God forbid, and one of these safeties go down. Are you comfortable with having Marcus Williams be that safety? You have no choice, obviously, because there's not much left. But it's just such a weird fact of the matter that Marcus Williams' play has declined so considerably. But hopefully he figures it out, and you know they can go back to that big nickel, because I love that formation. Even the dime look that they do quite often with Kyle Hamilton is very fun to watch as a film analyzer. But moving forward, it's looking like two safety here on out, which is
right.
A bummer.
Yeah, that is an unusual thing here too, because they really moved to a four corner dime in this game instead of a, which is interesting, by the way, because you know a lot of people say the Ravens are better in man coverage, and they're better in man coverage because the safeties have let them down this year. That's the reason why they're better in man coverage. It's not, I think actually the current safeties, they might be perfectly fine going back to zone, but they're now really, if you put four corners backs on the field, you're highly incented to play man coverage. It's not that there's not any corner, maybe like a Marlon Humphrey or somebody who's physical enough that he can, you know, roam the field in the middle and do the things a linebacker would from that normal weak side linebacker spot for the dime. It's just that it's more natural that your four corner dime would be used against teams which play a lot of 10 personnel, like the St. Louis Cardinals, like the Arizona Cardinals, I should say, used to do a few years ago when they played them. It's not very common against other opponents.
Yeah, I think you're right. They're going to have to play that man coverage. It doesn't look like, I mean, again, Marlon Humphrey is very physical, as you mentioned. I think he'll be fantastic in that role that, you know, Kyle Hamilton's given up, but I would be surprised if they don't run more man. And to your point, I agree. The Ravens do play zone better when their safeties are playing well, because they don't have to worry about guys flying off 70 yards down the field because you're misdiagnosing coverages. So I think you're right. I think the Ravens could still run some zone, but they may be forced to play man coverage. And that'll be interesting moving forward, because there are some teams that, you know, you don't want to have that against. The Buffalo Bills is a prime example. You don't want to play man against Josh Allen. So it'll be interesting to see how the Ravens kind of tweak their priorities to given the opponent they face. But I think moving forward, Hurts is coming up, so maybe you might see some shifting there. But again, you're absolutely right. The Ravens are going to be forced to play a lot more man than usual. And I know fans are very cheerful of that, but playing zone gives
you
something.
Be careful what you wish for.
Exactly. Fans, you need to realize zone gives you a lot of advantages, especially with this unit that is very good at running to the football. Even in that Steelers game, you saw it. So, yeah, it's going to be tough for us, for those guys in those special situations.
Yeah, and I always feel like compelled I have to say this. There are zone concepts to man defense, and the zone is effectively played by the back end defenders, who have to make choices then about how to bifurcate the field and force the quarterback into more tough decisions based on how they position themselves relative to two receivers, say. And all of offensive philosophy is basically run at attacking usually safeties to try and make them make poor decisions about where they move. So It shouldn't be unexpected that a team that has problems at safety and coverage would have a lot of problems in general trying to hold down opposing teams, because the safeties are so central to what opposing offenses are trying to game plan for.
That is very well said, and that's absolutely correct. The teams are attacking safeties, and that's literally the first person the quarterbacks are looking at usually after they're diagnosing where the blitz is coming from. They're looking at those safeties and figuring out, how can I exploit this matchup? And the Ravens have been, you know, porous in that regard. And you saw Joe Burrow and that 70-yard bomb streaking in the beginning of the second half. he knew immediately where to go with the football. And that's because you are attacking those safeties, and it's your job as a safety to make sure that that doesn't happen. And that's why the Ravens had to make that choice. I'm very happy that the Ravens had decided to put Kyle Hamilton back there. You talked about all of the disadvantages to that, but they're a better football team with Kyle Hamilton there. And next year they have to tweak it, but we'll talk about that when we get there.
Maybe that may be the Ravens' highest draft need next year, is finding the next great free safety in the draft that they can really count on. Okay, well, the changes weren't all at safety. This game, there are several at corner as well, and they were big ones. So first of all, Humphrey moving to the slot cornerback role for all nickel snaps. So you have no more big nickel, and you still played 57 out of 72 that were not Neal's, 57 out of 72 nickel snaps. So what that meant is that there was a wide open space in there at left corner for somebody to play a lot more, and that guy was Nate Wiggins. So Nate Wiggins got a lot of additional playing time in this game. I thought played very well despite that costly defensive holding call.
Yeah, and you know, these calls happen, especially for rookies. The speed of the game, they try, but they think they're, you know, they got the speed, and Nate Wiggins does have that speed. But I think that, you know, sometimes when you get in situations where you have those savvy receivers that you're seeing for the first time, you're going to get those holding calls. I'm not really too upset about that. To your point, Nate Wiggins did play, I think.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Exceptionally well. We'll see what goes on moving forward. I think he deserves that playing time. I think skill-wise, he's probably the second best corner right now, in my opinion. So you got to use your guys. You've given him those opportunities in certain sub packages to get acclimated to the game. But we're nearing the end of the season. It's crunch time. Let's get this guy some snaps and see what he can do. You can live with the mistakes of that rookie because his speed is such an advantageous thing for this defense. And I think it pays just huge dividends throughout the season. And we've seen the turnovers haven't been there. I think sometimes fans equate good cornerback play to turnovers and pass breakups, and that's not necessarily the case. Just being a guy out there not making mistakes sometimes is good enough. And with his speed, I think that those turnovers and pass breakups will come. I like what I saw from Nate Wiggins in this game, and I think the Ravens are, you know, and we're talking about it throughout the show. I think this team is trending in the right direction with their personnel decisions, and I think Nate Wiggins is another one game on the field.
I'm going to be working on this as we go here, but in terms of how often he's targeted now, that's really one of the big advantages of Wiggins. Quarterbacks don't want to throw at him. I mean, yeah, he's a rookie and he's a little bit grabby or has been at the pro level. That's going to be correctable because his makeup speed is outstanding, and he needs to do some better things with his feet at the top of the stem so he doesn't get in a position where he feels like he needs to be grabby. But one of the big things coming out of college for him was he was a great player for trusting his makeup speed entirely. I mean, he hardly ever put his hands on the receiver in college. He got one penalty, I think, his senior year or his junior year, actually, for him. But was very impressive in terms of trusting his feet and not using his hands.
Yes, and I think that's the reason why I'm so positive this is going to be correctable. I think once he gets his technique down, post move for the receiver, that's what I call it, post move. But I think that'll change a great deal. And I think also something that we need to take into account, you know, it's difficult when you have a defense that is making all these mistakes. As a rookie, you don't want to be that guy that makes that mistake. So I think that may have something to do with mentally the grabbing and stuff like that. But I still think that he's played phenomenally well. And you're right, defenders, teams aren't going to target this guy because, one, you got another guy in Brandon Stevens who doesn't really play the ball as much, and you want to target him more too. That speed is dangerous, and you see it on film. It pops up, and it's very evident. So I'm sure quarterbacks are cautioned not to go his way. So we'll see what happens moving forward as he gets more playing time. Will the targets increase? But I like where the Ravens are with that corner spot right now.
All right. So I just calculated these for the two players. So Brandon Williams has been targeted 69 times on 516 coverage snaps. That's 13.4%. This is actually surprising to me. Nate Wiggins, 35 out of 281, 12.5%. I would have thought the difference would be even more than that, because I think just my thought has been that Stevens has been targeted a lot more on a per snap basis. But I guess part of it is that Wiggins has been in more for obvious passing downs. And when that's the case, then you're going to have, nah, I can't convince myself that argument makes any sense. Now that I started it, I went down a bad road there. All right. Well, anyway, I'll try and get into the underlying reasons why that might be true here. But Brandon Stevens, you mentioned, played for three quarters, got beat for the 37-yard play for by Pickens down the left sideline. And it was a pretty, I mean, there have been two types of plays where he's been beaten on pretty regularly this year. Number one is over-the-top throws where, and Charles Davis pointed this out immediately, where the receiver does not show his hands early. Get your hands up late, make the catch, and Stevens is going to have a lot of trouble defending the catch point, even when in phase. And he was tight in this case. And the other one is any kind of back shoulder to a big man. He's just been completely vulnerable to, because he does not look at the quarterback, and he's not looking back for the ball, and he just doesn't have the ability to turn on that route. It's a hard route to defend, period, but Stevens is exceptionally vulnerable to it.
Yeah, and I'm glad you said that. It's very difficult to play that. I think Stevens, I mean, that transition to safety to corner isn't as easy as people think. It's very difficult. I think he's able to stick with the guy. He's able to run with the guy. I think he has the athleticism and knowledge. So that's one thing in this game, but I don't think he trusts himself enough to be able to turn back and look at the quarterback and still stick with this guy. And I think that's the reason why teams are taking advantage of that. And you saw what Pickens was able to do by waiting to put his hands up before catching it. That's going to confuse him every time, because he's playing the receiver, not the ball, and not the quarterback. So unfortunately for him, and I'm a huge Stevens fan. I love adversity players, where players overcome adversity. And that shift from safety to corner, I think, is very difficult to make. So I root for the guy, but definitely see that, you know, he struggles in those regards, and teams are going to continue to take advantage of that unless he improves.
All right. Well, three plays after that 37-yarder to Pickens, he was pulled from the game and replaced by Trey White, the Ravens' newest acquisition. Reportedly doesn't, you know, by his own admission, does not really understand all the complexities of the Ravens' coverage scheme right now, which I would think for a right cornerback with his experience. So, okay, why is right cornerback easier to learn how to play than left corner? Because you're typically on the X side, where you have a lone receiver on that side. And yes, there's a great space budget for the receiver, but you're more likely to have a man responsibility there that it is primary to everything you're doing. It was surprising to me that he wouldn't feel like he's ready to play that, but he looked fantastic. Was part of three drive-ending plays among four targets he had. I thought he looked great. He got his hands on the football twice in the end zone. You can't ask for more than that, nor can you create a situation that has a more contrasting ball skills element than between him and Stevens. You know, they'll look back for the ball, find ball in air, you know, be in position to knock it down. Just was very effective. And I did not see this coming from Trey White. I did not see him being as good as he has been.
Yeah. And I'm very surprised by his comments, because he looked confident out there. He looked comfortable out there. And that's one, that's two things that we haven't really seen from Brandon Stevens this season. So I'm very shocked by that comment, because he looked good. And I am a little less surprised by this, just because of what I've heard was the reasoning behind his decline when he was with the Rams. I'm not sure how much injuries of that plays into it as far as the injury goes. Right. So I was a little optimistic that, because he had a little more time post injury, that he performed better. So, but he looked good. I mean, you don't need to be a Pro Bowl corner. I mean, there's only a few of those, but if you're solid, and he was more than solid, obviously, in this contest, then this will go a long way for the Ravens. I like the move, hopefully. And it looks like, you know, I haven't heard for sure, but it looking like this could be a permanent thing. This will pay huge dividends for the Ravens, because it's one less area of the field that quarterbacks are comfortable throwing to. And that's huge in the National Football League.
Right. Now, we have had a lot of questions today come in the mailbag that relate to the secondary. I kind of hope we've answered them all. I'll hit on the people who asked those questions, thank them again, at least in part two. Maybe we'll have another little piece of information or two that we go over this. But we really did want to give this a thorough treatment. But that you've hit on the last question here, which is, what do you see as the Ravens' secondary moving forward from this point?
I really like where they're going. I try to be pessimistic with this, because I wasn't high on the Steelers offense in this game anyway. There were areas of concern that I thought were highlighted in this contest. So I'm very interested to see later on when you play the Herberts, when you play the Hurts, what type of, and when you play CJ Stroud, obviously, how this defense responds. But this is trending in the right direction. I think the Ravens had to make these moves, especially at safety. The skill sets of these newcomers with White and, well, I say Ardarius Washington, newcomer, but really not so much. But will these guys really complement the defense very well? As you mentioned, the Ravens are going to be playing a little more dime now that they don't have this big nickel package at their disposal. So we'll see how that man coverage works in these games upcoming, especially against the Philadelphia Eagles. But I like where it's going. It's trending in the right direction.
So I'm gonna have one surprise thing I think might happen, and that is I think Harbaugh has already commented that Stevens is not moving to safety. That was last week. Mm-hmm. As I heard him say those words, I'm always trying to decode what people are really saying as opposed to, you know, what they're not saying. Mm-hmm. I had a comma for now at the end of his discussion about how Brandon Stevens is trying very hard to play that right corner position. You know, you have Tre'Davious White playing well. For starters, Stevens has played some time at safety with the Ravens, and he's played some emergency safety when they've needed him to move to the back end for to finish a game. I think, you know, first of all, the Ravens are amazingly thin at safety right now. Brady and Kane are not ready to play at an NFL level. I don't believe either of them will be anything but a, but honestly, they're both dime prospects. They're guys who could play good zone as an, you know, as a weak side linebacker, but I don't see them as back end guys. And maybe Braid, the more likely the two, would eventually become this. Sanusi Kane just actually got hurt in the last game anyway, leaves the Ravens extremely thin with serviceable safety. So I guess their first choice would be to put Marcus Williams back in the game, but it wouldn't shock me if something happened to one of the big two back there now, if Williams or Hamilton, Washington or Hamilton, that they try and get Stevens quickly up to speed on playing on the back end again.
Yeah. As soon as I saw the sub package for White for Stevens, I had that exact sentiment. Maybe now the Ravens may be more inclined, to move Stevens to safety because he played well there in spots. And I think he's more comfortable there. He may not admit it, you know, that he's more preferable at that position. But I think to your point, when push comes to shove and you have to make a move, that then secondary, especially at safety, leads credence to the fact that you want to move Stevens back there. So I would not be surprised if that happens at all. And I'm glad you said it because I think that will actually add some flavor to this defense, moving Kyle Hamilton back in certain situations. Maybe this happens next week where you move Brandon Stevens in certain packages if they want to play big nickel and you keep Kyle Hamilton there. You never know. But it's a move that's well within our arsenal now that they've made that switch, at least you think, with White moving to that corner spot and Stevens sitting in the bench.
Yeah, he was a guy who played down by down different positions at SMU. So in fact, it was very hard to scout the guy. I've told the story before, but you had to look for the red shoes that he wore that were very distinctive in order to pick him out. But he'd move around safety, you know, left corner, slot corner, you know, all on the same drive, on the same series of downs. Sometimes he would be switching. So he's perfectly capable of doing it, I think. I know he'd settled in at right corner for his own personal career. It won't help him to move to safety because he wants to get paid as a corner. But unfortunately, right now, I don't think there's a big market for Brandon Stevens after this year. So is there a deal out there at you know, 3 years, $9 million or something? Sure. Is there a deal at $10 million per year? No, I don't think there is. And that's really unfortunate for both Stevens and also for the Ravens, because, you know, one of the things that they could have gotten was a good comp pick out of a Stevens departure via free agency. And now, you know, he may just walk with no compensation at all, which would be a shame.
Yeah. Unfortunate, but it's part of the business. And yep, you thought it was going to be the case entering this year, but it hasn't been the case. And it sucks. But, you know, I think the Ravens have to think about the now, and the now is get Stevens out of there, put White in and see what happens. And for one game, at least, well, a quarter, look really good.
All right. Let's move on to some other topics here. I can see we're running behind on time here because we have a lot to cover still in the first episode here of two. But some outstanding play on third down from the Ravens, 4 out of 16, which speaks, by the way, to the pass defense in a lot of ways. That dime package in particular, 8 times the dime was on the field, 7 drive-ending plays. Now think about that for a second, because first of all, you would expect a dime to be in on a obvious passing down. Oftentimes it's on a third down, so there are opportunities, but it's also 7 for 8 stopping the opponent on those downs, even if it was 100% that.
Yeah, it's very crazy to think about. I know fans are, you know, all about the dime coverage and, you know, man coverage, but yeah, the Ravens look good in that situation. And I'm gonna say I'm shocked, because again, as I mentioned, I thought the Steelers offense would struggle a little bit in this game, but not to this effect. This is a complete 180 in my opinion from where they were in that Bengals game, the game that, you know, a lot of fans were very frustrated with, but this is a good sign. I'm liking what I'm seeing. And if you're having success with that dime, that might be a recurring theme that we see throughout the rest of the season.
Yeah. It's hard to believe that any team in the NFL could go 0-for-4 in the red zone, just because the Ravens have been so good there and been very dominant. They're the best red zone team in the league. The Steelers went 0-for-4 in the red zone this game. Obviously, that was a big part of keeping this game close. Keep me out of the end zone 6 times, obviously, is a big deal. And unfortunate, of course, that dog's going crazy down there. They kicked all their field goals. But there are other components to this, too, I want to get into as quickly as possible. I'm sorry, I'm just going to keep going here, Sam.
Yeah.
I thought Wilson was bothered by the Ravens' pressure in this game. And he'd been very effective in his first 3 starts. And I had some chatter back and forth. People thought, well, Wilson is already very limited as a quarterback. Well, Wilson's, you know, has 3 games against pretty average defenses, not terrible, certainly not very good defenses so far. And he faces a Ravens defense, which is supposed to be terrible. And he struggled mightily against this unit. It's a matter of, you know, by far his worst game of the year. He had a passer rating of over 105 coming into the game, and had a passer rating of what, 67.5 or something in this game.
Yeah.
So
that's crazy.
It's hard for me to not take that as a positive sign and belittle it in some way by nature of the opponent.
Yeah, you have to. I mean, it's a stark contrast to where, you know, both Russell Wilson was and where the Ravens defense was. And that pass rush started getting after it Thursday night. And you thought that, you know, the offensive line of Cincinnati wasn't that great, but this game, you saw another chance to prove yourselves, and Odafe Oweh and company, ooh, they looked good. And that probably is another reason for this past defensive success. And I think this may be another instance where this trends in the right direction and this continues on.
Yeah, we have to, you know, I try on this show to break that down as much as I can. And this is one of the things, Sam, it's like pitching a defense trying to separate pass rush and coverage. They are so intertwined. It's hard to break down all the adhesions and all the interactions that occur between the two. But we've got a little way to look at that. We'll save that for a little bit later in the pass rush segment. But I do think it was a good game for part of the game for the pass rush, and then something happened and it made it not as good that we'll talk about. Edge setting, not so great in this game. It was okay. They didn't allow any big plays. That's one of the nice things about having Hamilton back. Is that you avoid probably some 20-yard runs that you might otherwise get, and they get held to 11 or 13, which is exactly what happened in this game. Their long run was 13, and they had about 3 that were 11 or 13. But they ran for, you know, 3.6, whatever it was, per carry. Maybe it's 3.7 if you don't include the kneels. But I think a pretty good day overall for the run defense. I just wasn't particularly excited with some of the edge setting and some of the odd man disadvantages they seem to have on screen passes to the outside that I think would have been less if Hamilton had been up closer to the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I saw immediately. Sometimes you'd see 3 offenders coming at a screen and just one DB back there to cover it. So that is one of the knocks of having that, and I'm sure the Steelers saw that and took advantage of it early. But all in all, I thought the run defense played well. There are some things that I think hopefully get shored up. I was very confident that the run defense would perform well given the situation, but Steelers still ran the ball fairly well. And I think lack of setting the edge effectively at all times has something to do with that. But all in all, I think a pretty decent day for the Ravens defense.
Yeah. I'll say this, and I mentioned this, everybody, it wouldn't even be a show unless I mentioned the fact that the Ravens again dressed only 4 defensive linemen. And I continue my objection to this process. I think any 5th defensive lineman will provide you with more value than, or either Wormley or Tupou, the guys that they have to choose from, provides you with more value than one marginal special teams player. So I deal with one less fast guy on special teams, take a little bit more chance in covering kicks. But I would not put the team in a position where they can have an injury that really, really puts them in trouble. Not only did they have that injury again to Travis Jones, which dramatically decreased his effectiveness in the second half, by the way, after he got hurt. But it also, it puts the rest of the pass rush in a bad shape because they're not as effective. They had all four of their sacks occurred, by the way, before Travis Jones' injury. The last one was two plays before. And then after Travis Jones got hurt, and they did still have some pressures in the second half, but a lot of them were proximity pressures, people getting in the cone. But it wasn't nearly the same kind of hands on the quarterback pressure that they were getting until Travis's injury. And you know, do you have to take some injury chances in the NFL? Sure, but do I ever want to play a game with four defensive linemen? No, because once the other team knows you're short on defensive linemen, they do all sorts of things to try and screw you in that area. And the Steelers know the Ravens very well. They won the snap count 74-54, and they leaned on the Ravens with extremely heavy sixth offensive lineman personnel packages to try and force the Ravens into the base defense. And when you do that, you're using three defensive linemen per play, further increasing the workload. And it's just a miserable situation for the Ravens defensive line to find themselves in.
I'm very surprised by why they continue to dress only four linemen. I really don't understand it. And I thought in this game, in which we knew the Steelers game plan would be to play a heavier set, run the football, that you'd have a fifth guy. They've had five linemen in the past, but for whatever reason, sometimes they decide to dress four, and it definitely holds you at a disadvantage. And you're correct. As soon as Travis Jones got hurt, I was like, okay, we're down to three. What are we going to do here? Are these guys going to have to play the rest of the game? Thankfully, he came back, but he wasn't as effective as you mentioned after that injury. So I'm not 100% sure what their thought process is. I'm with you. They really need to start dressing five on a regular basis, because these things are going to happen. And when you're behind the eight ball, you cannot deal with having only three interior linemen at a time and expect to have success on defense on a regular basis. They've gambled and they've had success, but I would much rather be safe and sound with the fifth guy.
Right. I say the Pittsburgh Steelers are an organization that has always overplayed their linemen. They have, you know, Hayward and Kiesel and Aaron Smith and Tuitt and guys like that. They played a huge disproportionate percentage of the snaps. They're still not stupid about it. They always dressed five and often six. The Know Your Foe guest I had on this, Alex Kozora, an old friend, I told him, you know, what the Ravens' plight was with this four defensive lineman crapola. And he said that you know, that's crazy. That you know, the Steelers never dress less than five, and they usually dress six. Their sixth guy in this game would have been a guy like Preston Smith. And I suppose you could say Preston Smith and Tavius Robinson might be similar stylistic players. Robinson's a little smaller, but that they might be similar stylistic players, is able to kick inside if needed kind of thing. But that's not just enough. I mean, they really need the Travis Jones and Pierce combination. They need one of those guys available every single game full time. And ideally then you want both, so that they can have their pass rush pairing that goes with that be much more effective. And both of those guys are tremendously complementary pass rushers. Don't pick up a lot of pressures personally, but they ensure that players like Matabike get the best possible stunt opportunities and one-on-one matchups that they would otherwise not normally get when they're paired up with, say, Broderick Washington, which was the case in this game.
Yeah, and that's beautifully said. I believe that that pairing is very underrated, and I think fans need to understand. I know there are rumblings to get an edge rusher in here and there. I think there's some credence to that. I think the Ravens would be served if they had another premier pass rusher here, or even a decent pass rusher. But to your point, Michael Pierce and Travis Jones, those two together have been outstanding. Hopefully Michael Pierce gets back. But again, you got to dress five guys at least, especially for a team that prides itself on defense. I'm very shocked by that. I'm sure special teams plays a factor, but I think moving forward, the Ravens need to very seriously consider that changing their philosophy and having those five guys on the field, and we'll see what happens. But, you know, it seems to be give and take. I think if I'm not mistaken, there's only maybe been two more instances than that where the Ravens dress five as opposed to four. I'm not 100% on those numbers, but I think
it's been more four than five. I believe it's 6-5 now.
Yeah.
Four to five. So that's, and last year it was 16-1, 5-4. The only one time only. And you know what they had? They had a beauty of all five guys were healthy the entire season and shared every single snap. And Broderick Washington was left as a healthy scratch for one game. Yeah. But it was an amazing, you know, confluence of circumstance and the smart decision. by the way, if you're looking for something to criticize John Harbaugh for, there's a whole bunch of stupid John Harbaugh things, and you can blaming him for individual play calls. I heard a great analogy to this, like blaming him for the 2-point decision to not have Henry on the field is like blaming the CEO of Coke because McDonald's sold you a flat one. It's like, you know, it's the offensive coordinator makes that call. Right. It's let's say Harbaugh wanted to thought, well, that call is suboptimal. I should say something or call timeout and get him to change the call. First of all, if you do that, if you're a department head and you reach down into somebody else's, you know, sub department to tell them how to do something directly, you better do it with careful purpose. And you know, when you do it at a micro level, that's when you get called a micromanager and people don't want to work for you anymore. But even if he thought, I have to say something because we have to threaten the Lamar Henry mess point on this play, he couldn't really have done it because to call a timeout would have been giving up the one of the remaining three, which was the safety blanket that they had to maybe get the ball back. So there just was no option for him to change that play under those circumstances. Now, when the Steelers called timeout, he could have said, keep Henry on the field. I don't care about the changing of plays. We want to have some other Henry play there. He could have said that, but he couldn't have changed the play as they were, you know, calling it and getting to the line of scrimmage.
It's very funny sometimes listening to Ravens fans, you know, criticize Harbaugh. That's not Harbaugh's MO. I think what makes him a great head coach is that in those situations, he's not putting his hands in the cookie jar necessarily and being that guy that's going to forcefully make his command. I mean, a timeout's a timeout, yes, but you only have really a few seconds to make that decision. And so I'm okay. Would I have liked to have Derrick Henry on the field? Yes, but I'm not going to put that on Harbaugh. And we've seen plays similar to that work more often than not. So I'm not really knocking Harbaugh for that. But to your point, yes, I cannot in good standing blame Harbaugh for that. And if John Harbaugh had called a timeout for that, still not got the 2-point conversion, and it came down to a timeout to possibly get the ball back.
Disastrous, yeah.
Fans would have crucified this guy. So I'm 100% on board with that.
They would have had to try an onside kick if that were the case, and that probably would have failed. So it would have been a miserable situation. Part of the problem in that game was that maybe they scored too quickly. But it's nice. It is nice to have the backup to do that. But with a minute left, it's not an ideal time to be kicking the ball back to the Steelers and Russell Wilson, who might be able to move down the field on you in that amount of time for a field goal, because pretty much any quarterback can. In this day and age, completion percentages being what they are, and the Steelers still had timeouts, it would have been a tough situation. They would have had to get a stop in order to finish things. All right, let's keep going a little bit. I want to talk very briefly about packages because I think I've hit it on the other things. They played two jumbo packages with four defensive linemen, another strain, but they did a good job. Two runs for zero on that, and one of those was either a third and one or the fourth and one. I forget which one they actually stopped with a jumbo. Then they had 15 base snaps, 4.7 yards per play. Just mentioned that all that really was the Steelers trying to wear on the Ravens in terms of their defensive line depth. Standard nickel was 47 snaps. That's 100% with Humphrey at slot corner, 4.6 yards per play and three sacks. You'll notice there's a damning consistency to what's going on here, is that nothing really was easy for the Steelers to get yardage on. Then they had the dime, 8 snaps, 7 drive-ending stops, 2.3 yards per play, 1 sack, 1 interception. It was the most effective package for what it's worth. And I think we've hit on the other things. I mean, the Ravens would have liked to play some big nickel in this game, but the Steelers certainly play a lot of 12, some 13, some 22. Those are good big nickel formations to get Hamilton up close to the line of scrimmage. They just didn't have the personnel to do it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think of the Kansas City Chiefs being a time where, you know, big nickel would be huge defending Travis Kelce. But, you know, I think, you know, for this game, especially what you're trying to do, where you're trying to bounce back from giving up so many yardage and so many points to Joe Burrow, this is a great opportunity for them to see what they have here. That's not to say they won't call big nickel ever. You know, there, as you mentioned, there are situations and players that they can plug in and do certain things to get Kyle in that position and shore some things up. But I like the variation of plays. I like what they're doing. I like that, you know, they're trying to simplify things, but not oversimplify things. They're still, you know, having that diversity in a given personnel setting. So I like the call of plays. I think those critical stops in fourth and short and third and short was huge. It showed me that, one, they were very much aware of what the Steelers were trying to do. And and even in those passing situations, as you mentioned, where they had those driving stops, the DBs were able to come in and perform admirably. So I'm very impressed with what the Ravens were able to do in that short amount of time. I think it was yin and yang, night and day, from what we saw from the Bengals game to the Steelers. So good to see.
Did a very good job, no doubt about it. Well, I'll tell you what, Sam, we're gonna shut off part one here. We'll start off with the pass rush in part two and talk about that. But tell folks where they can find your work online or talk football with you.
Great. Yeah, you can find me on YouTube at Raven Sock Podcast. That's usually where I keep the majority of my stuff. You can also find my podcast on, you know, Apple Podcasts or Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. There, you can also find me on Instagram and Twitter, X, at Raven Sock Podcast.
Okay, and at Raven Sock Podcast on Twitter or X is your handle. Great. Highly recommend Sam as a guy to tag into your conversations if you're not bothered by that. If people tag you into a conversation, is that okay?
Oh yeah, for sure.
Okay. Sometimes people tag me into some conversations that are these troll baiting back and forth stuff, and I really don't want to be any part of it. So I have to be a little bit hesitant to involve other people in this. But I really appreciate talking football with you, Sam. It's great. You're very knowledgeable, obviously, and a great person to go back and forth with. I want to point out to other folks here, if you'd like to do a film study short, the bye week is coming up. It's a great week to get one in. Hit me up with your topic. Usually what I ask people for is about 3 bullet points on what you want to talk about. Some nice narrow topic that we can get done in about 20 minutes, trying to provide some alternative, shorter content for fans of film study. Sam, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
We'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Less $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.